As more African countries follow South Africa's example by withdrawing from the International Criminal Court, the discussion rages on about how this will impact on human rights abuses on the continent. Now, one man who is very outspoken about his support for South Africa's decision is Dr. Oscar van Heerden, who is a scholar of international relations, and he focuses on international political economy with an emphasis on Africa and SADC in particular, and he joins us this morning on the line. Dr. van Heerden, thank you so much for your time. Good morning and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Thank you, and welcome to your listeners.
Now you have a different view. What's the basis of your view? Why are you in support of the South African government's decision?
Well, in the main, it's four key issues that I just feel very strongly about. The one is that I'm opposed to the duality that exists within the international system. And what I mean by duality is that post-World War II, you find that rights and responsibilities that is expected of nation states are applied differently depending on how powerful you are. And the obvious case with regards to the ICC is that Bush and Tony Blair can simply go into the Middle East, bomb and kill and maim, and nothing happens to them. Whilst when there's atrocities on the continent, the ICC is quick to run and enforce its jurisdiction. So the duality issue, to me, is a big issue. The second thing is the fact that the powerful North simply just continues with its disdain to the enforcement of the ICC. You know, the old proverbial saying, the powerful do what they can, the weak suffer what they must. And I think that's the second reason why I'm taking issue with this. And then thirdly, is that we need to make a distinction between your legal arguments and your political. Mm-hmm. And legally, a lot of people are in the right. I'm not questioning. I'm not saying that legally the court is not following due process. Indeed, evidence must be provided. The prosecution's team then will take out charges. We've seen that because of lack of evidence with the Kenyatta case in Kenya, the court kicked it out. So I'm not one to question the legality and the function of the legal processes of the court, but politically, I'm saying it's an unjust system, it is unequal, it is a system that simply does not exert its jurisdiction equally to those that are wrongdoers. And lastly, my fourth point is that I feel very strongly about the fact that justice cannot trump peace. And what I mean by that is that where we are trying by all means to have a peaceful settlement in conflict areas, in war-torn areas, the ICC mustn't come and jump and then want to scupper that process. And here I'm talking about in the Omar al-Bashir case, for example, in Sudan. Mm-hmm. I'm not a proponent and a defender of Bashir. I think that if he has committed war crimes, then indeed he must face the full might of the law. However, he is a protagonist in a war, and we are trying to negotiate a settlement. It does not help for the ICC to then come and say, we want to arrest him.
Mm-hmm. Now, the argument one sometimes hears is that, look, the ICC deals with the cases that are brought before it, and if the case is brought against Bush and Blair, they would consider it. However, there would be another technicality, and that is that these countries have not signed their own statute. What would the response be to that?
Well, two things. One, I don't want to go into the world of speculation, but I think you would agree with me. Given the power of those two countries, it would be very difficult for the ICC to want to prosecute Tony Blair or Bush, because they will simply ignore the ICC, and what is the ICC going to do? That's the first thing. But the second thing is, it's interesting that people talk about non-signatories, because Sudan is also not a signatory.
Mm-hmm.
Sudan has also not signed the Rome Statute, has not ratified it, and yet the Security Council, of which members of the Security Council in the UN who are non-signatories, refers a matter to the ICC to prosecute a non-signatory country, or citizen of a country. So it just gets more and more bizarre when it comes to the Omar al-Bashir issue.
What about what you've mentioned in your article, that judges at the ICC are not required to have a legal background? How did that come about?
Yes. So I see some people have responded to that, and I just want to clarify. There is what they call List A judges and List B judges.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you go and look at, and of course they occupy different houses, if you like, within the court, different tribunals. And yes, in terms of List A, it's very clear that the requirement is a criminal law background, prosecutorial background, etc. But in List B, that is not necessarily a requirement. If you read it very clearly, it states any person that has been involved and has some standing with regards to international law, humanitarian law, etc., etc. And so even though one of the respondents to my article said that the current 12 judges all have legal backgrounds, the only point I'm making is that that is not always the case. If you look at previous judges, especially the List B judges, as well as in the future, there are individuals that can be in a presiding officer position or judge position that doesn't necessarily have legal training or legal qualifications, let me put it that way. They might have been involved in NGOs or in institutions that fight for, you know, so for example, in South Africa, you have the Legal Aid Clinic, you have paralegals, and you have people who have been involved in fighting for the rights of others, but have not necessarily studied law, if you follow my drift. And I'm saying that in List B judges in the court, that is what stipulates, that you don't necessarily have to have the qualification, though they put emphasis on the fact that you must have been involved, you must have some reputation within human rights law or within international law and so forth. So I'm not trying to be disingenuous. The point I'm making there simply is that it is not a requirement for List B judges.
What about the argument that, yes, okay, the ICC has got this duality, it's got all of these flaws in its current structure, but rather than withdraw, why not remain part of the process and try and fix it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is I've come to understand that the South African government has exhausted quite a few channels with the court and its various organs to try and reform from within, especially pre, during, and post the al-Bashir issue. The South African government, the Department of Justice and Correctional Services, have engaged with the ICC and have said, these are some of our concerns, these are where we see contradictions within the treaty law and customary law, can this be clarified so that we can move forward? And they simply refuse. Or let me say there's been no traction.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those proponents that say the government has suddenly just woken up and decided to withdraw, I say nay. They have engaged in the process. They've engaged with the court. They have, you would recall, even during the al-Bashir matter when he was here, the South African government tried to send emissaries to the ICC to say, how can we clarify this? How does it work? And they wanted to hear nothing of the sort. And so I think it's disingenuous by some to want to say that we have not exhausted other avenues.
Mm-hmm.
And may I also just say, you know, in terms of my article with regard to our involvement in other Bretton Woods institutions like the IMF, the World Bank, the WTO, and the United Nations for that matter, I think the South African government chooses to remain inside those organizations to try and transform it from within, because they are part of a bloc in the world that says we need to push and try for reform. However, in the Rome Statute incident, or in the case of the ICC, nation states are on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go there as blocs and as a group. And so South Africa, you know, I can't speak for the South African government, but they obviously took a decision that it's better to fight with from within the UN and some of the Bretton Woods institutions, but we've exhausted avenues with the ICC, and so we want to get out.
Do you suspect that many more African countries would follow South Africa?
I suspect that's what's going to happen. I suspect there is going to be a domino effect. I suspect that some of the former colonial powers are going to try and cajole and force some of their former colonies to remain within the statute. But, you know, they don't have a leg to stand on, many of them. don't have a leg to stand on. The French don't have a leg to stand on because of the atrocities that they have been involved in North Africa, in Mali, in the Central African Republic, and in Côte d'Ivoire, and so forth. And so I do think there's going to be a domino effect. And may I just add, it's not necessarily for the worst. You know, I also want to make the point that this Afro-pessimist view that we as Africans can't actually take on our own challenges of abuses, human rights abuses, etc., I find that profoundly insulting. I think that the AU and African Criminal Court need to be given the necessary jurisdiction to also deal with some of these crimes of genocide, of war crimes, and so forth. We've just had a success story in Chad, where the former head of state has been tried and has been sentenced to life imprisonment. Of course, he's appealing, and we'll see how that pans out. But that is a clear indication that we can do it ourselves and that we don't necessarily need the ICC.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Dr. Van Heerden, what has been the response in the main to your article?
It's been twofold, as one expects. You know, unfortunately, in South Africa, and South African political scene, everything seems to be in binary, black and white, evil and good, police brutality versus fees must fall. I mean, and unfortunately in statecraft and in state international politics, it's not that simplistic. You know, things are not that clear, black and white. Sometimes you partner are in alliance with some because you want to win a few battles, and tomorrow you are not in alliance with those because you want to optimize your gain, and that's how the game is played. But it's been twofold. There are those that are saying thank you. There's a lot of things we didn't know that we assumed was the case, and so thank you for the clarification. And others blatantly just taking issue with it, that they feel it's a departure from the Mandela era of human rights and an emphasis on human rights, and they feel that it's a mistake for South Africa to withdraw. And of course, they're entitled to those opinions.
Dr. Oscar Van Heerden, thank you so much for your time this morning. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Go well.